Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It's May 1st, 2021. Can't believe it. It is May 1st and the NFL draft is in the books. This is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC, or of course, you can find me at overthecap.com. Wild, wild week with all the stuff. You know, you've got the draft. I figured, we'll talk a little bit about the draft. As I always say, I don't know much about the players. Talk a little bit about the process, maybe a little bit about the trades. And then you've just got this Aaron Rodgers news that really dominates the whole thing. It kind of sucks for some of these draft picks. You know, this is supposed to kind of be their moment in time. And you kind of feel like the Aaron Rodgers news just didn't let anybody breathe. So that's what we're going to start with. And we'll mainly talk about Aaron Rodgers and whatever else. We've got Nelly hanging around back here. Nelly, you want to say hi? Didn't think so. I'm sure the kids will make a surprise visit at some point too here. I'm back on the light beer now. So we're going to do light beer for the next month, 8 weeks, something like that. So just steady Michelob Ultra. Nothing too much here at all. This is better than the Yingling that I had the other week. Was not feeling that at all. Not as good as the Conehead IPA though, though that was not a light beer. So we'll do light beers for a little bit. So if you're drinking something better, thank you. So, you know, have one for me while I try to, you know, lose a couple pounds at least here as we get through that. You know, trying to change the gym routine, I guess, a little bit now. We've, I think, got the strength is back up to over pre-pandemic levels for the most part, I think, with most of my lifts. But I've also put on a good amount of weight, I think, in re-upping my lifts in the last couple of months here since the gyms reopened in New Jersey. So we'll try to cut back a little bit here. Hopefully lose, 10 to 15 pounds maybe in the next 3 months, I guess. We'll look to do that. But, you know, without going crazy with any kind of low-carb diet or anything like that. You know, just looking to lose a little bit of weight and just want to keep my lifts up to where they are. Nothing crazy, but just, around where they're at right now would be good enough. So we'll see if that actually works out. My guess is 3 weeks from now, I'll probably be complaining that I'm still at the exact same weight and everything is not working. Anyway, that's just whatever with the little beer talk here. So Aaron Rodgers, wild, wild stuff. So out of nowhere, there is just a release that Aaron Rodgers is going to get traded to the San Francisco 49ers. It was just so out of nowhere. Then it's Aaron Rodgers getting traded to the Denver Broncos. And somewhere in between is when the report broke that San Francisco thought they had a deal. Maybe even Rodgers thought he was going to be a 49er and didn't happen. Then next thing you know, it's I'm incredibly unhappy in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers wants out. He's told his teammates he's not coming back. He's not going to play another down for Green Bay. You can connect the dots because the San Francisco news, when it came out, made no sense at all. The San Francisco news made it sound as if San Francisco didn't know what they were doing in the draft. That was the sound of it. They made this trade up, which I think in hindsight, most people would probably look at as a mistake having moved that quickly on it, seeing the way the draft shook out. Now, you can never know who is going to move up and who's not. But when you look at the way that, quarterback 4 and 5 fell and you claimed you were comfortable with any of the quarterbacks, my assumption is QB3 probably would have fallen as well, at least somewhere down to where certainly you could have probably made a trade with the Eagles on draft day that would have cost you a lot less than what you did with Miami. And definitely if you would have waited, who knows, he may have fallen all the way down to where Chicago gets their quarterback. It made it sound as if things were crazy. You know, people were all over him for this Mac Jones potential pick. I know nothing about any of the players. I just know people were unhappy about it. You know, they didn't think that it was a good use of draft capital at all, that there just was not the upside in that type of player for San Francisco. And then it's just like, okay, now what's going on? Now they've made this trade. Now they're talking about Aaron Rodgers. It just makes no sense. So you know that there had to be some truth to it because they would have had no benefit of leaking it. And Green Bay would have had no benefit of leaking those talks either. So you knew that the conversation was legit because it just wouldn't have served a purpose otherwise to have that out there. You can very quickly, as the news comes together, start to piece together what happened here. It's very clear what happened here is Aaron Rodgers and his agent must have gone to San Francisco and basically said, hey, listen, here's the deal. We want to move. He wants to come play with San Francisco. Call up Green Bay and see if they're interested. I'm sure that's exactly what happened. Whether Rodgers was told that the deal was going to happen, you know, that it's likely, maybe his agent thought it. I don't know. Maybe he was thinking it. It sounded as if he thought that they were going to be able to push this through and they were going to get him in San Francisco and he was going to get out of Green Bay. And Green Bay clearly said no, no interest. And now it leaks that Rodgers has a list of teams he's willing to play for. He's willing to go play for the Raiders. He's willing to go play for the Broncos. Now the rumor mill starts heating up about Denver, you know, that it's a lock. He is a lock to go to the Denver Broncos. You know, it could change, but it's basically a lock. Needless to say, it never happened. It wasn't a lock. So he's still in Green Bay. Then the story is that he's never going to play another down for Green Bay. Never. Won't do it. He'd rather retire. So, you know, I put out just what's at stake for him if he actually went down that route. Players don't have a lot of leverage in those situations when you talk about it from a financial perspective. Now, Aaron Rodgers made a hell of a lot of money in his career. All right. His contract history shows his career earnings around $242 million. So he's made a lot. Now, obviously, he's paid a lot in taxes on that. You have a lot of different fees that come out from that and, you know, all the things that you're spending stuff on. It's still an ungodly amount of money. All right. He's averaged over his career about $15 million a year. But there is potential to have to pay the Green Bay Packers back a lot of money. You're looking at, in his case, somewhere in the ballpark of $30 million. So Aaron Rodgers earned a $57.5 million signing bonus when he signed this extension back in, I think he signed in 2018. Anyway, he's got 2 years left of it. You look at that proration on that, and you're looking at about $23 million, $11.5 million per year. If he retired, Green Bay has the right to ask for that back. He also was paid a $6.8 million million dollar roster bonus back in March. I'm assuming he was actually paid that money. If he wasn't, it's a little different. But in any event, either way, that is also subject to forfeiture in the event that he doesn't want to return. So you're looking at about $30 million that he would actually have to return to the Green Bay Packers over the course, I guess, of the next 2 years is how that works. I don't know if they can ask for it all back at once or if you go year by year. I forget exactly how that process works because it's a rarity that it happens. You know, most of the time a player retires, they don't ask for that signing bonus money back. You know, the Lions did with Calvin Johnson. That was a major story. They also did with Barry Sanders. Generally, what happens is if the organization feels blindsided by the retirement, they will ask for money back. If there is a circumstance involved to where they don't feel like it's a legitimate retirement, they will ask for their money back. That's why the Lions asked for that money back from Calvin Johnson. Part of it's probably that they're cheap, but that's why they asked for that money back. That's one of the reasons why there were rumors that the Cowboys were going to ask Tony Romo for his money back. Tony Romo also had a lot of money at stake when he decided to leave to go into broadcasting. But I think the Cowboys realized he wasn't going to start for them anyway. They weren't looking at him as a starter at that point, so they let it go. They had done a very bad job with the Romo extensions, not the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys did a bad job with all the doubling and tripling down on that contract. Romo's side had done a very poor job with the contract language that he had a lot of money at stake. The Rodgers group has done a better job with that to where the restructure bonus money was not going to be at stake in the event that he was to retire. Now, these forfeiture clauses also kick in the event a player holds out. If Rodgers is to hold out, so let's say he just doesn't want to play anymore with the Packers, but he wants to stay in the NFL. He doesn't want to potentially have to pay this money back all at once, whatever it might be. He would have to go in there and he would get fined $50,000 a day for every day training camp that he misses. There's a little bit of money that you lose in the offseason program. Those numbers are so much smaller. I don't really even add them up. You know, you're talking about $3,000 a day. Yeah, I get it. You're listening to it. It's like, how is that a little amount? For these guys, that's a little amount of money. $50,000 a day adds up pretty quick. Your forfeiture clause kicks in once you miss, I think it's 5 days of training camp. I think that's when it triggers. I'd have to look to see the exact dates on it. but basically it triggers then, and you can lose if you make it to the regular season. You can forfeit up to 50%, I think, in the regular season of your salary allocations. I think you can lose 25% in the preseason, and then I think you can immediately lose 25% once you miss the first week. Basically, they charge you for 4 weeks. Now, those are not mandatory. The fines are mandatory. There's no getting out of the fines. The forfeiture is discretion of the team. Again, if things got really bad, you'd be looking at the 11-5 on the one, and they split the roster bonus across the years on the contract. How many years does he have left? Three? So they would split that over three. So he would have at stake, basically, if he missed the beginning of the season, he would have at stake about $6.9 million that they could ask for back. And you could keep asking for more and more and more the more weeks you miss. Each week you miss, once you get past like week four, it's like a 17th that you could have to pay back. The financial leverage never, ever, ever lies with the players in these situations. The leverage that lies with the player is the fact that the player is the best player in the NFL. The leverage is that you want to try to make that player happy. You want to have that player here. Now, this is a very different situation than other disputes that people might bring up, you know, like a Darrell Revis, you know, a Vincent Jackson in the past. Those are players who didn't want to leave their team. Those were players that wanted new contracts. This is a player that supposedly wants to leave the team. Typically, if a player wants to leave the team, and you go through this whole process and eventually they're going to leave the team, you're probably going to charge them for all of that stuff. It's a lot of money at stake for Aaron Rodgers here if this is what he wants to do. Now, you've seen some full court press stuff that is nonsense. Well, you know, he is a finalist for Jeopardy. Come on. I mean, yeah, might Aaron Rodgers go and play Jeopardy or be the host of Jeopardy? He might. Is he going to make $20 million hosting Jeopardy? Come on. It's different. If you were talking about an announcer gig where ESPN was going to blow him away with an amount of money for the first year, you know, on a 3-year deal, and you knew that as long as you didn't completely flop, that you had that chance to basically be a super high-end earner, you know, for the rest of your life, you know, for as long as you want to do this, you could probably do broadcasting. Rodgers will be 30. He's 38 this year. I would imagine you can still, I know that they want to go younger and younger and younger nowadays, but my guess is you could still get into your 60s if you're a good broadcaster without issue, I think. So, you know, you could be talking about a pretty long period of time, you know, if that was the case. Jeopardy, I don't know. They can't pay that kind of money for Aaron Rodgers. Maybe if he became the way Trebek was, to where that became the show, right? You know, you've got this syndicated show and the show is so associated, or, you know, with that individual that you have to really make it worth his while to want to keep doing it. Maybe that's the case, but Aaron Rodgers wouldn't be at that point right now. They can't commit to him that kind of money, I wouldn't think. So I don't see how that's an option. The trade stuff, the other problem with the trade, even if Green Bay says, okay, you know what, Aaron? Golden, we'll trade you. They can't afford to do it. The Green Bay Packers have no cap space at all. None. Let me see what they have. I shouldn't say none. The Green Bay Packers have $2.6 million in cap space. After they sign their rookies, they'll have about $170,000. If they trade Aaron Rodgers, they will lose $1.1 million just on his trade. Now you have to replace him on the roster with another player making at least $660,000. So you're going to lose about $1.85 million on your cap. So now you don't have money to sign your rookies, and you're barely anywhere. That's a disaster. You paid him $6.8 million already. You've lost that money if you trade him to another team. So you paid him $6.8 million to go somewhere else. So there was no way you could have traded him during this draft. There is no feasible way that they could carry $38.4 million in dead money for Aaron Rodgers. No feasible way. If you want to trade him post June 1, you can do that. Then it's $21 million dead and you defer $17 million or so to next year. So that's the way to do it. So they would have to wait a month. So this is something for no matter how unhappy he might be right now. Now this talk that he wants the general manager fired. You've seen the organization try to insulate the coach from all of this by basically saying, because the trigger that set this off was the Jordan Love draft pick last year. Now they're basically saying the coach had no idea, zero input, zero thought that the Packers were even thinking of a quarterback last year because they know that they need that relationship to at least be somewhat solid. You can deal with the front office hating somebody. It's much harder to do when it's the coach and the player. So they're trying to insulate as much as possible. I'm sure nobody believes that, you know, that he had no inkling at all that they were going to take quarterback. But that was the fuse. Now you hear all these other things that people are talking about when it comes to this stuff. You know, the Florio suggested, well, they could give him a big raise because his contract deserves to be like Patrick Mahomes. And the answer is no, it doesn't. You know, you signed a contract. Part of the reason that when you sign these deals, the risk that you take in signing the deal is you take the job security, you take the financial security. The risk you take is that the market is going to pass you by. Aaron Rodgers is 38 years old. The quarterbacks in the NFL that sign contracts at this age get about $25 million. Aaron Rodgers is a great player. He is no greater than Tom Brady. Tom Brady plays for about $25 million a year. Tom Brady, when he had his blow up with the New England Patriots, and then he basically said, I want more money, when he saw Jimmy Garoppolo get more than him, they gave him some incentives in his deal. That's exactly what Green Bay would do. That's a comparable situation. Comparing him to a 20-something-year-old Patrick Mahomes is ridiculous. But if he's that mad, is that really going to make him happy? I mean, maybe it will. I don't know. You know, he sees the writing on the wall. You had to see it. You've got this organization. They didn't touch his contract this year. You know, all that talk about restructure, you know, raise, new deal, all this stuff, they did nothing. They had the right to do it. And he has to know the minute they don't touch his contract, why don't they touch his contract? Because they don't want him here after the season. And he knows it. Because next year, his dead money is $17.2 million. And the Packers salary cap situation with him on the roster next year is a complete disaster. Right now, not even including the rookies, their effective cap space for next year, once you get him to 51 players, is about $35 million over the salary cap. That doesn't include the rookies they just brought in, you know, a couple days ago. At least I don't think it does. Possible Nick may have added them. We have a good idea what the numbers are going to be for the players. So anything is possible. So I shouldn't say that they're not in there. I don't think that they're in there. I don't see them here. So I don't believe that includes them. But even if it did, you're looking at $34 million over with him. You've still got to sign Devontae Adams. You've got other players who are free agents. Your cornerback is a star. He's going to want a new deal. You know, he's on what, the option year next year? You know, he's going to want a new deal. So Aaron Rodgers really doesn't fit. He's got a $40 million cap hit. You save $22 million trading him next year. That's the writing on the wall. That's what he sees. That's what he knows is going to happen. Now you get aggravated with the whole situation. It's like you had as great of a year as you could possibly have last year, and they still don't want to keep you. It's the NFL. You're almost 40. It's amazing, you know, to have a career this long and to be as good as he has for this long is amazing. But the teams aren't going to wait for the bottom to fall out, because if you wait for the bottom to fall out, it's just a mess. So you try to do something in between the same way they did years ago when they made the move from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, which was also a really messy situation. And that led to Brett Favre being traded to the New York Jets in the middle of the summer. Maybe the same thing will happen here. Not going to the Jets, but going to one of these other teams. You know, Denver, with the way they approach their draft, is a team that would make the most sense. If you look at the salary cap space they have and the way that roster is built, that roster is not built for Drew Lock. That roster is built for a capable quarterback. I don't know what benefit there would be in Aaron Rodgers going to the Raiders, but the guy with the short stick there would be Carr, who would go from earning, you know, 20-something million dollars this year to nothing. You know, he would get cut, and I don't think that there would be a list of teams just waiting to pounce on Carr, certainly not at that number. you know, to get it. That's why I mentioned the other day, I thought he could get Penningtoned. And what I meant by that, you know, a lot of people don't remember that, you know, that is a while ago. When Favre became available, Chad Pennington went from being the penciled in starter for the New York Jets to basically going on the street so they could execute the trade. And he was able to land on his feet with the Miami Dolphins. Not that kind of teams, I think, that would be interested in Carr. It's a different league and different approach, I think, to the positions now and what you have set and what you don't have set. No matter what, the numbers here are just enormous for them to trade him. And what's in the best interests of the football team is to let things play out this year, see how things go, and then make a decision in 2022. That's what's in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers. Might not be in the best interest of Aaron Rodgers, but that is what's in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers. That's what I would expect the Green Bay Packers to try and do. I think at this point, what you have to do is you're going to put all the heat on the general manager. You're going to make it to where the two of them basically are not on speaking terms. And Rodgers will show up to work each day because he's got respect for the game, for the players. He wants to win, and he'll go out there and he'll try his best, and he will look to get out of the organization the next year, which is probably likely. The whole situation is just such a mess. I'm not even sure on the trading of the draft pick aspect, because they do have rules in place about trading draft picks kind of after the draft has ended. Certainly about they couldn't send on negotiating rights. So, you know, you would have to have a team, and I'm not even sure if this would work. You would have to have a team that pays the full signing bonus for a player. You know, let's just say it was one of the top picks, you know, in the draft. Let's say it was San Francisco. They would have to pay their guy $22 million as a signing bonus and then look to see if they could trade him. And I'm not even sure if NFL rules allow that, because I still think they make you have room under your rookie pool to be, I think, 660. You know, after the trade, because he'd have a 660 base. But I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's how it works. So I'm not even sure if you could be trading a guy who you drafted this year to get him. So it would be all future picks. The whole situation is just such a mess. And it's so weird, because Green Bay is pretty well run. But this is two quarterbacks in a row that this has happened with. Now, there's a big spacing out period between the two. It's two quarterbacks that they've had a pretty big blow up on. This is going to be a battle. It's going to be a PR battle, because what you have is you're going to have two sides trying to drag the other through the mud. Now you're starting to hear about how, well, they haven't surrounded him with talent. And now people go back and they look through the drafts and you start to realize, gosh, they never take offensive players. They never do. And it's true, they don't. But how many times through the years have you complained about what the Green Bay Packers have done in the draft? Now, you might have complained about a pick that they made, or said, you know, that pick wasn't very good. And typically the people who cover the sport, not cover the individual teams, but cover the sport on a national basis, they don't really talk about that stuff. They don't really talk about players who were bad until way after the fact. You might say, like, okay, that ended up being a bad pick. How many things were really written that said they don't do enough to surround Aaron Rodgers with talent? Stuff has always been written about them not being active in free agency, but it was never like they don't get players play around them. And this is one of those, like, hindsight analysis things. You don't realize it. Now, part of the reason you don't realize it is because Aaron Rodgers was so good. He was kind of carrying that team. I think the reasons are you don't look at it that way. But now you get to the point. You get to the point where Rodgers is at, where now you're just so angry at the organization. And you go back and you look at this, and now it's like, okay, well, now I'm going to feed this information there. They don't spend in free agency. Okay, you can point back to 3 years ago, the 1 year they actually spent. They didn't spend a dime this year. It's basically his whole career haven't spent. That's pretty well known, at least, though. Now you go back to the draft and you start saying, they didn't add anybody. And you start looking at it and you go, they're right. They really didn't, but they found good players through the draft. Did they use top picks on them? No. But they did find some good players to fill out that team with him. The two things kind of work hand in hand, but they're going to try and drag the organization through the mud now. I don't know which is going to work. Right now, I would say the early inclination, because it was pretty clear he wanted out, Aaron Rodgers took a hit with Green Bay based on how this started. Now this is why you start to pull in the organization. You pull it in more and more, and you try to drag them through the mud to where you get the fan base on your side. Sometimes that's the only way you can get through some of these disputes, you know, it's a really tricky situation for the Packers. I'm sure the way that they're going to handle it is they're going to put all that heat on the GM. All the heat goes on him. Take it all off the coaches, all off their chairman, put it all on him. See what happens from there. But from a financial perspective, I mean, it's really hard to move this year. Really hard. You can do it after June 1, but it's really, really hard. And I don't even know what you're going to get back in return. You know, and it would be a mess for Green Bay if they did that, only because the moves that they made this year, including keeping Jones, you know, restructuring deals and keeping Preston Smith, those kind of deals were done with the thought that Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback again this year. You just went to back-to-back championship games. You didn't win them. And you're just trying to take one more shot with this group. If he's not there, you wouldn't have kept some of those guys to play with a rookie quarterback or first-year quarterback in Jordan Love. You would have kept some of them, but you wouldn't have kept all of them. You would have made different moves that would have been financially smarter or financially better in the long-term interests of their cap health in Green Bay than what they did end up doing. I think that would be a little bit of a mess, too, if they did that. Now, that's the Aaron Rodgers situation right now. So, you know, we'll do some more posts on it if any more news comes out. But I don't know what more there really is to talk about with it in terms of outlining the options here. The numbers aren't going to change. You know, people keep asking me, well, can he pay money back? Where does this nonsense come from about paying money back? Nobody pays money back to the team to get a trade. You can't pay back signing bonus money. You know, maybe you can come up with some funky way that a player can void his contract if they pay you money. You can do that. That doesn't get you any trade compensation. That just gets the player released. I'm not even sure where that thought keeps coming from, but you can't do it. They're not going to magically be able to move him for less because he agrees to pay Green Bay back $20 million for the right to be traded. There's no contractual reason that you could come up with to do that. And it would also be asinine for him to do that. It'd be stupid. So anyway, we'll see where that goes. The draft. I'll just start with the Jets. You know, you just hope that this is the time that the quarterback works out. You just hope. None of these are a sure bet, but the Jets have taken enough stabs at this. You got to say at some point, something has to work out. Since 2000, you've basically got Pennington, who was injury prone, at least competent. Sanchez, who just wasn't very good. Kellen Clemens, who was terrible. Geno Smith, who was terrible. Christian Hackenberg, who was beyond terrible. Sam Darnold, who was pretty bad. And so now you're hoping that this is the guy. This is the one where it's going to work. If he can't be at least competent, I have to think the Jets are just cursed. It's like you take so many shots at it. At some point, just dumb luck has to make it work. I'm hoping. I hated the trade the Jets made in the first round. Trading up for a guard is stupid. It just is. Now, is he going to be the guy who turns out to be a Hall of Fame player, you know, that upper echelon? Maybe he is. I don't know what percent chance you give something like that. Two? I have no idea. You made a very marginal increase in your draft status by going from 23 to 14 or whatever it was, and you gave away your entire third round. Your third round players, if you look at the numbers here, you basically have a 50-50 shot of finding a player in the third round. So that means you basically have a 25% chance that neither of those guys are going to be a player. So odds are you're going to get one guy who's going to play for you. And the Jets need players. The Jets desperately need players. And the third round is the last round where you typically can find a higher percentage of players who not only are good, not only have long, you know, a little bit of a longer career, but actually have very, very good careers. And that's not to say you don't have them fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round, but you know, you're going from something to where maybe you have let's say a 25% chance of finding like a higher quality player to in round four, probably like a 12% chance, you know, and then a 10% chance, and then almost nothing in six and seven, and undrafteds or undrafteds. So you find them, but those are truly diamonds in the rough. You have a better shot in round three. The move from where the Jets were to where they ended up, you're not gaining that. You're giving up a player. You're giving up at least one player, if you play the odds here. You're giving up at least one competent player to pick a guard. You were going to pick a first-round talent no matter what. You can find guards at other spots in the draft. You may have found this same guard there. I just didn't care for that. I thought that was a bad use of resources, especially for where the team is. Now, I get it. You want to surround him with as much talent as possible. You want to make him feel safe, secure. You know, you've got the left tackle that's there. You wanted to upgrade one of your guard spots. You couldn't do it in free agency. This is what you end up doing. It's just, it doesn't make that kind of difference. As long as you don't have a turnstile there, you know, a guy who just can't block, you can find players. You can find young players in the draft. Though that's a position where if you look at it, there are players that you find third, fourth, fifth round that can be capable players, and certainly second round, definitely second round. Jumping the gun in the first round for that position is absolutely pointless. You can debate, there's almost no real reasons to trade up unless you're trading up for a quarterback. I see that's really the only reason that you should really ever do a major trade up is if you're, you know, trading up for a quarterback because of the importance that they have to the team. But if you are going to trade up, if you must, the only positions that you should be trading up for in the first round are cornerbacks and pass rushers. That's it. Nobody else. I'm not even a wide receiver. Wide receivers are way too hit or miss. And you can find a lot of receivers throughout. Again, it gets to the point where, yeah, it's dumb luck sometimes when you get them later. It's those positions that you should be trading up for. So if you want to throw a wide receiver in there, you can throw it in there. I personally would not. But you can't be jumping up to pick guards and tight ends. And that's just, it's a waste. It's a waste of what you could do to build your team. So I didn't like that at all. I thought it was a terrible trade. It's a two for one. It's a one you may have gotten anyway. So it's not like you even got that spectacular position that's going to make that kind of a difference. For this trade to, in my mind, work out for the Jets, he has to be a top three player at the position. You have to have a player where you were so certain about it. You know, he doesn't have to be Revis, but that kind of talent where you are heads and shoulders above most of the other players in the league, to where you got it so right, might just be dumb luck that you got it right. It's got to be so right. That's the only way that you could say that trade is going to work out. Because if he's just a guy, if he's just an average guard, which means he's going to protect the quarterback, be pretty good. It's not worth giving up another player for that. You know, the Jets have had guards who have been okay. Brian Winters was okay. Would you have given up, when Brian Winters was 26 years old or something like that, would you have given up a third round pick for Brian Winters? I don't think so. You know, he was a competent player. I don't think that was the right one for the Jets there. You know, I thought that was one of the more questionable ones from the first round. The other one, a lot of people didn't like when I said this, because you do get the, you know, a lot of the talk about, well, this guy is different. He is a true difference maker as you go down. And that's the Atlanta Falcons selection of Kyle Pitts at tight end at number four. He immediately becomes, I think, the eighth highest paid tight end in the NFL. It's not a position that traditionally has been much of a difference making position. We hear all the time, and I know that now we've got the Calvin Johnson comparisons here. Uncoverable. Can't cover him. Nobody can cover him. I know that we have had many tight ends, maybe they haven't gotten that praise, but you have heard all kinds of stuff. Elite athleticism, this great, that great. I've heard uncoverable all the time. Safeties can't line up with him. Linebackers can't keep up with him. It happens all the time, and the players bust. They don't end up being anything. You have to be so great to justify him at four. He's got to be Gronkowski great. That's what he has to be. That's how you justify a pick for tight end at four. Guy's got to be greater than great. I always find it to be very difficult because no matter what, they're going to be lined up at some point in time in a somewhat traditional tight end role. It's very coach specific. It's very scheme specific. You may have a coach in Atlanta now who's not going to be here in 3 years. and they may have a completely different approach to the position. Look at Jimmy Graham when Jimmy Graham went from the wide open Saints offense to the Seattle Seahawks offense. Jimmy Graham was a tremendous athlete. He was tremendous in the role that the Saints put him in, and he was a perfect fit in that offense. He went to Seattle. He was a good player, just used completely differently to where he became an afterthought. He was still a top quality athlete, top quality player, elite skills in some sense. They didn't use him that way because that's not the way the Seattle Seahawks ran their team. Now, by the time he got to the other teams, he wasn't the same player. So I don't know if you can really draw those comparisons as he got older. But when he was younger, that was very clearly the case. You know, you look at like a Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis had a great career. Pull up Vernon Davis's numbers. I mean, just a fantastic career. You know, Vernon Davis, two-time Pro Bowler. You look at the numbers that he put up, 965, 914, 792, 850. I'm looking at his top seasons that were there, you know, before he started to tail off. Did San Francisco become a great team because of Vernon Davis? Well, they really didn't. So I don't know what you're really asking for here with it. So he's got to live up to all the hype and then some for them to justify that selection. Lions, interesting selection. You know, they already have a left tackle under contract. So this is incredibly high to be picking a right tackle. Incredibly high. The excitement in their war room was really over the top for this guy, but I guess he enjoys, I don't know, chewing glass, eating knees, whatever it is. Detroit does some weird things. They have done some weird things in the recently with the draft, you know, lots of tight ends, running backs, kind of crappy positions, linebackers. I kind of feel like this falls in that same category, even though this is considered an elite talent. I just don't know, you know, when you have a position where it's not like you use rotations, right? Left tackle, as long as he's healthy, plays every snap at left tackle. I just don't know if you want to take a right tackle up this high. If you were talking about a player who had signed 2-3 years ago, okay, I get it. You put someone at right tackle for a year and then they're going to shift over to left tackle a year after that, maybe 2 years after that. But that is, I would think, unlikely. They just signed an extension last year. Carolina, Denver, both take cornerbacks. Carolina made a mistake with the Darnold trade. You've got these quarterbacks that fell. They're in desperate need of a quarterback. Yes, they're in desperate need of secondary help as well. I have to think if they did not make that trade for Sam Darnold, they would have taken a quarterback there. Whether that was Fields, Jones, whomever it was, they would have taken a quarterback. But instead, they doubled down on Sam Darnold and they went with Horn at corner. That was probably a jump on need for them because the thing that makes no sense here is when you get into the trade with the Chicago Bears and the New York Giants at number 11, I think it was. Chicago, let me just double check to see what Chicago gave up here. You know, this was a haul for the Giants, just an absolute haul at this point in the draft. So the Giants get the first round and a fifth round from this year. And they will get a first and a fourth next year from Chicago. So they got the extra first round pick plus some secondary players there to allow Chicago to take a quarterback. You know, it's similar, I guess, to what the Chiefs gave up for Mahomes and the Bills gave up for Josh Allen. The thing that I can't figure out at all when you get to this is why is Carolina, if Carolina is not taking a quarterback, and the same goes for Denver, if you are not taking a quarterback, why in the world are you not taking that offer from Chicago? Because you know if Chicago wants this quarterback, Chicago clearly is making phone calls up and down the board. Because there's a point where they know that they probably can't get in at number 4. They know they can't, you know, they know the Bengals aren't moving. They know Miami's looking for too much. They you know, Miami traded back up to 6, so Miami's not going to trade out of 6. Really, the question probably for them was, is Detroit going to take a quarterback? And when Detroit does not take a quarterback, well, now you're starting to make your calls. And your first call has to be to Carolina because you want to get ahead of Denver. Denver brings in Teddy Bridgewater for a couple million dollars. That doesn't mean anything. You know, he could be a third stringer for all they care. You know, if you have a quarterback that's dropping down that was a consensus top 3, and, you know, maybe not a top 3, but whatever, you've got to be thinking, oh, I gotta jump Denver. So I'm sure they're trying with Carolina. Maybe they even offered a better package than what they gave. How does Carolina say no? How does Carolina say no? Or how is Carolina not on the phone with Chicago? If Chicago didn't call them, how are they not calling Chicago? Same goes for Denver. And Denver, you know, for them to come out and say, I believe it was Denver. I was in the car at the time, but I'm pretty sure that the quote was something along the lines of, we really like Justin Fields. You know, we love Justin Fields. We just loved Surtain even better, even more. How in the world are you going to try and insult people's intelligence with that? You just don't make a comment on it, because if you love a quarterback, you pick the quarterback. If you love the quarterback and your roster is Drew Lock and your roster is Teddy Bridgewater, you take the quarterback. So don't insult everybody and say, well, we loved them. We just love this guy a little bit more. Because that's not how you build a winning football team. That's not anything. So anyway, I don't know how Denver doesn't make that trade. Now you get to even the craziest one, the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas clearly doesn't want the number 10 pick in the draft. They clearly don't. They traded out of that pick because the guys they wanted were probably one of these two corners who just got taken. So they make a trade with Philadelphia. They don't get anything for it. You know, it's not bad. I mean, it's still, you know, it's the same concept as the Jets thing. You know, it's a stupid trade for Philadelphia. You know, Philadelphia is looking to jump the New York Giants because they knew that the Giants were going to take a certain player. The Eagles wanted that player. So they called up Dallas and they said, we'll give you a third. Okay. Philadelphia, you don't even know who they're picking, right? Philadelphia needs a quarterback. So Dallas, how the hell did you screw this up too? You go to Philadelphia and you take a third round pick. And the Giants, a pick later, get a 5, a 4, and an extra 1. Okay, they get the 20 instead of the 12. You picked a linebacker with the number 12. Another freaking linebacker. What are you stopping? You think everyone's got Ezekiel Elliott there for you to tackle after a 2-yard gain? What are you doing? Like, it was clueless, clueless, clueless. That was the order of that was the order right there. For Dallas to make that trade and then watch the Giants get all that future draft capital, it's insanity. There's no way Dallas can live that down. I don't care how good the linebacker is. I'll make an excuse on the guard. What are they going to do with that linebacker? What difference is he going to make to the Cowboys' fortunes in any way, shape, or form to justify them giving up another first-round pick? Now, I know there's some people say, well, they don't think highly of the 2022 draft. I looked at the things. You will not find a draft other than the 2013 first round. That's the only one. You will not find a draft where there is this giant variance in awesome players and crappy players. It doesn't happen. Every draft basically ends up with very much the same amount of good players in the draft. That's how it works. Might there be some first rounds that are stronger than others? Yeah, the draft eventually balances itself out. And so I can't buy that. Chicago doesn't have a premium pick. What? Chicago's got Andy Dalton as the quarterback. You just had Andy Dalton as your quarterback. You couldn't win a thing. Even if Chicago was going to take a rookie, the odds of a rookie going in there and lighting it up to where you are going to end up with a really bad draft pick, you know, pick 28, 29, probably not going to happen. There's occasional rookies that do some stuff like that. You know, Andrew Luck had a great rookie year where they took advantage of a terrible division. And maybe Fields will be that good. Probably not. You know, again, the odds would be so much in your favor. I don't understand how you don't do it. So that gives you the Giants who just, you know, hit a home run with this. It was a good thing for the Giants, whether Dave Gettleman is going to be here next year or not. I think it was a good thing for the Giants that their player was off the board because Philadelphia jumped to get him, because it opened the Giants up to a far, far, far better move. You know, they still get a wide receiver. It's a wide receiver they like that a lot of other teams liked, you know, by dropping down 9 spots. And they're going to get a number 1 pick next year, which they need. Because the Giants, and this is one of the things that you have to look at sometimes with some of these teams. The Giants are going to have no cap room next year. Giants went a little crazy in free agency this year. they need to find cheap players. They're not going to be able to do it in free agency. How do you do it? You do it through the draft. So they end up picking up an extra three picks by doing this trade. So that's three valuable, cheap assets that they can fit in their salary cap situation. That's the way to do it. You know, one of the reasons too with the Bears giving up a lot of picks, and sometimes these also work in reverse. Chicago's cap is a mess. Chicago has to be thinking a little bit longer term or even short term. They don't even have the money to sign the rookies this year. You know, they have to be thinking about, you know, well, what's our cap situation? Now, I'm not sure where we are with updating all the trades, you know, on the site. Nick does that because Nick's really good at it. The Bears are about $3.4 million over once you factor in draft picks. So that's about where they were. So that they probably didn't give up any more, any less, because the jump up is, you know, it's more expensive player this year, you know, even with the lesser picks going out. But if you look at them next year, you know, the Bears cap situation, you know, about 39 before rookies. So probably around 20 million, I would guess, effective is where, probably 25 is where they're going to be. You know, and they have a lot of contracts that are on the line as well. So, you know, I think they probably looked at it and said, you know, they have money that needs to be allocated in other places. Maybe, you know, for the draft stuff is not even as important. As for the Bears, I like the trade for them because they need a quarterback. The way that their team is constructed, they needed to take a risk to be able to get a quarterback because you cannot continue down the path of Foles, Dalton, and everything else. Now, this... To me, this was lucky that you had a quarterback that falls here because you needed a couple of things to happen to get this to work out. You know, first of all, you had to get San Francisco to pass on the player. Now, maybe they would have liked Lance as well. I don't know. And then you needed all these other teams to do it. I think Atlanta was pretty much a given. Miami, you know, Miami in hindsight, that second trade ends up being a bust for them, you know, taking wide receiver here. You needed Detroit to not take one. You needed Carolina. You needed Denver. And you needed Philadelphia, all not to take them. You know, and then you could jump up and do that because your next goal then, once he starts falling, and again, like I said, once he falls past Detroit, you just have to make sure that you get ahead of New England. And that's really the main thing was just finding what that trade partner would be to get past New England. If Chicago, you know, if Chicago even called up Carolina and said, well, you know, we're thinking about trading up. You know, are you guys looking to move down? And Carolina's just like, no. Well, you know for a fact that you're guaranteed at that point, you know, that the quarterback is probably going to move past that player, the quarterback, or they're just never going to move off that quarterback. So, you know, you might be able to even do a little bit of gamesmanship to where you can figure out what they're interested in. So, in other words, if you went to them and Carolina said, well, we want two number ones to move up to number eight. Okay, you're not going to make that trade. And then the second thing that you would do is you would probably say, all right, well, you know what? If they're talking to us, probably means they're not taking a quarterback either. So, you know, that's possible as well. Maybe that team, maybe they asked for too much. Who knows? They made the move with the right team. It's the right spot. You know, it's not a terrible price to give up if you're going to get a quarterback. You know, the one thing with the draft charts, and I say this with ours and everything else, you want to have a draft chart that's kind of dynamic. And what I mean by that is when you trade down, everything should be static when you trade down because there's a lot of unknowns. But when you trade up, you know who you're trading up for. And unless you're Houston in the middle of the draft, apparently you think you're trading up for someone, realize, oh, we didn't trade up far enough and you got to make another trade. Whole different story. You can place values on these players based on the positions they play. When you break down, like our chart is, okay, we did them in numbers because that's the way that people do them. But if you do them as percentages, which is really what we do, when we calculate it, you know, a percentage of a top five value, you can say, well, you know, a quarterback, when you really look at it, if you change them into, say, dollars and cents instead of point values, a quarterback is worth three times as much as, you know, a different player, you know, a different position or whatever it might be, you know, maybe three times as much as maybe that's too much based on the play scale, might not be based on the impact, but different ways that you can look at it. But at the very least, I think you would look at this and say, okay, well, if we say that the points on this pick are X, you know, the points that, what did Brad and I give that? 1785. Well, the reality is, if you're taking a quarterback, you know, that quarterback is going to be worth a quarterback, not necessarily this quarterback, could be a bust. But in general, you know, a quarterback is going to be worth about 1.5 times the value of probably any other position. And you could probably argue it's a lot more valuable than that. But I would say, with the exception of maybe some pass rushers who have gotten up there in price, but even still, I would say it's probably like 1.5 times. If you looked at like the top 10 salaries at positions, it's probably 1.5 times the next closest one. So you could take that point value very easily. You could say, okay, our value on this is $1,785, and, you know, we can bump that up, you know, significantly because we're going to be taking a quarterback. And we could look at that as like a, you know, 2,600 points, which would essentially be like the third or fourth pick in the draft, you know, something like that, because of the position you're taking. You know, the same way with the Jets, you would downgrade by you jumping up to get a guard. You would downgrade the value because the value of that position is so much less than the average position that's taken in the first round. You know, I think that's, you want to have a dynamic look at it. So I think for Chicago, this was a must for them. You can say that, you know, this is about the general manager saving his job. You know, that might be true somewhat as well, but this is where you see the writing on the wall, and it's the only way to move your organization forward. Look, this wasn't them doing something crazy for the worst quarterback. This wasn't them, well, shouldn't say the worst, the lowest rated quarterback. This wasn't them doing something crazy for a tight end. This was them taking a shot at it and seeing if this quarterback can fix the team. I think that's a trade that you make, and I think it's a trade that you can justify and kind of call that a good trade for both sides here. But I think it's a home run for the Giants completely here. You get the Chargers taking a tackle, got the Jets move, which we talked about. You know, Minnesota's the masters of trade downs. They're just great with that. Patriots get a quarterback. I was not happy with that. I was really hoping. And, you know, the quarterback, the bust rate in the first round on a quarterback is about 40%. By bust rate, I mean, you know, guys who are basically out of the league in 5 years. That doesn't mean that 60% of them are stars. It just means that 40% of them really, really, really suck. They're just, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line, they're not even in the league anymore, or they're, you know, barely making the minimum. They're hanger-ons. You know, I was hoping that the Patriots would have to go down this route of like the Cam Newton, Jimmy Garoppolo, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah, I was really hoping that the Patriots, after all those years of Tom Brady, would have to go down the same route that my team has gone down. They end up with the QB here. Cardinals, whatever. Raiders, you know, they take a right tackle. Everyone said that was a giant leap. I don't understand anything the Raiders do. It's like there's an art to this stuff as well, and you do run a risk that you're going to lose a player when you don't pick them here. You have to have a sense of what other teams are doing. You got to have a couple players you're going to be happy with. You got to have a sense of what teams are doing. And the Raiders, we've seen this a couple times now. They just don't. And I don't know if this is the Mayock influence. I don't know if this is, you know, he's so into the draft stuff that you just find these guys you fall so much in love with that you can't think of losing out on. And you jump the gun, I think you end up costing yourself. And I think that's what they did. Let's see, Washington, it's okay. Giants, it seems there's anything else here that really stands out. Minnesota, Jacksonville. I didn't get the run on running back. So Pittsburgh and Jacksonville make back-to-back awful selections. Pittsburgh is old. They have no money. They need to get younger. They need an overhaul. What are you doing with a running back? Clueless. Same goes for the Jaguars. It's a wasted pick. You look at teams, when you're teams that need to improve, your teams that need to develop, this is not what you do. Both of those just awful moves there. Cornerback for the Browns, solid. Wide receiver for the Ravens, solid. Edge, I guess, for the Saints, that's fine. Corner for the Packers, nothing wrong with that. You know, and you got edge. You know, linebacker for the Bucks. They're just looking for whatever. You know, that is what it is. Let's see, what do we got? We got the big run on trades at the top of the second round. Didn't get that at all. You shouldn't really be going crazy on that kind of stuff. But a lot of teams jumped in there. Houston, you know, up, down, everywhere in the draft here. Jets take wide receiver. I was hoping the Jets would have traded down. Let's hope the wide receiver turns out to be you know, better than some of their other second rounders. But now you basically have him and Mims. You've got a, what you hope is a good young core receiver. You know, they can carry past this. I would imagine Crowder is going to be traded. I think the Jets have the depth to get by without him. He might not be traded at the beginning of the season, but maybe before the trade deadline. Anything else really stand out here? I don't think there was much. I mean, the Vikings took a quarterback. That seemed a little bit odd. Houston took a quarterback. That seems insane. They have so many holes. I don't really know what they're doing at all. I don't think they know what they're doing either. Let's take a quick look at some trades. See if there's anything really interesting here that stands out. Denver, did they move up for a running back in round two? They did. That's a terrible trade. You know, Denver had 5 wins last year. You shouldn't be trading up for that. You got to expect to be a really good football team to do that kind of stuff. Cincinnati drops. That was a good trade for them. Carolina and Chicago. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know why Chicago moved up, but, you know, they did. You know, again, you get into that stuff where you talk about the money aspect of it. The money that they were going to have to spend extra on Fields is probably one of the reasons why they may have had a cutback on a couple of these picks. You know, it's possible. Giants in Miami, it's fine. The trade that was really wild was Houston. Houston did just a couple of really, really, really boneheaded things. You kind of wonder what they're doing there. It's like they... You almost feel as if they're looking to tear that organization completely down to the ground so it can be completely rebuilt in like a different manner. I don't understand the purpose of it, you know, at all. Like, it just makes no sense. You know, you trade away, you're looking for a third, you give away a fourth, fifth, and next year's fourth. You make this trade in the 170s or so where you're bouncing around, you know, to get people. I don't really understand what they're building there, what they're doing. If you just look at the way that they've tried to, you know, construct that team, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, anything that they do. Hey, that's the way they are, I guess. You know, just a quick overview of the draft here, and then we'll get into questions. Just, I had looked at teams that spent the most on premier and non-premier positions. So the positions that I consider to be premier positions would be spending it on a quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, corner, defensive end, defensive tackle, and your non-premier positions are basically everybody else. When you look at it overall, Dallas actually, despite their flub in the first round, actually had 8 premier position players, it looks like, drafted, as long as I have the positions right for everybody. Just something could be off a little. Vikings had 7, Bengals 7, Panthers 7, Rams 7, Ravens had 6, Eagles 6, Bears, Bills, Titans, Washington, Atlanta all had 6. And then at the bottom, you had the Chiefs with just 2, Seahawks with 3, 49ers with 3, Texans with 3, Steelers 3, Raiders 3. Now, if you break that down into just the first 3, into just the first 3 rounds, which... You know, I guess you could kind of do. It's not a bad idea because that's where your top talent kind of comes from. Top teams were Dallas and Detroit with 4. Now, that's counting their offensive tackle as a left tackle. It's probably not the right way, but how other teams would have looked at it. Vikings, Bills, Giants, Panthers, Dolphins. You know, these teams all had 3. Teams that didn't, Rams, Seahawks, Falcons, Cardinals, and Broncos all just had 1. So those are the teams that are really at the top of the draft, probably not utilizing the draft properly for improving the team. They're looking at stuff that usually doesn't have that kind of impact on the team or players who are available typically later in a draft to build their teams up. And that's what they ended up kind of doing there. So I guess if you looked at it, and maybe I'll do that this week once I get the official positions in for everybody. If you take the kind of stuff that I talked about before where we use the percentages versus the actual points for a draft value, we can actually come up with the kind of expectations for a team in terms of like an expected contract return on all the players that they drafted. Some of the stuff will probably have to be changed a little bit. I'll have to think about it only because I don't really want to get into doing positions, you know, where you really give the strength of a position besides the salary. But I do know that the quarterbacks taken, you know, typically late in the draft are usually non-factors. So it's probably not right to put them at full value because it throws it off. I might need a little bit something different in there. I'll have to think about it. But maybe next week we'll go through that and see which of the teams that probably added the most contract value and the most value over what they're actually paying for those players. You know, the most excess value through the use of a better strategy with the draft by looking at premier versus non-premier players. Maybe that'll be next week. I'll see where I'm at with everything and how much time I have to do that. And I would break that down in a post as well on the site, but not I probably would go more in depth than something that we would do here. All right, so let's get into questions here. Let's see, Seahawks podcast question. Seattle seems to be filling holes in their team by trading massive amounts of draft capital and signing a ton of low-level veterans to 1 or 2 year deals. This strikes me as a harbinger of doom for their future. What will the bill come due, 2022, 2023, or can they continue the strategy indefinitely? Eventually, it comes back to haunt you because you just don't have an influx of talent. I don't think they're going to have a salary cap issue. You know, that they are doing a lot of these void year kind of things, but unlike other teams, they're very short term. They're doing it to kind of just get by for this year. I don't think it's going to be an issue there, but I think the problem is as your drafts get worse and worse, you're not bringing in these young, talented players. You don't have the ability to surround Wilson with what he needs to continue to be successful. You know, I know we get on Pete Carroll for a lot of stuff and say the game's passed him by. He has been very successful, and he probably will still be successful even if he can't get to, you know, he probably someone that's not going to be able to get a team to that next level anymore, but is probably always going to get you into the playoffs. I don't think that they're going to have a complete bottom fallout until Wilson is gone. Once Wilson breaks down, so Wilson will be 33 this year. So the worry that I would have is probably when he turns 35. That's also probably when his contract ends. So I'd be worried there. You know, that's probably organizational change time. You know, Pete retires and Russ might be gone, and you know that's probably when it happens. But it's not a strategy that's sustainable for the long term. Most of these moves that they've made have all been moves that have been designed to get them over the hump, and none of them have. Some of them were nonsensical to think they would, such as the safety one. I think the bottom falling out is only going to happen if Wilson goes, or if Wilson goes downhill. You know, if Wilson is playing like Aaron Rodgers at 38 and he's still on the team will still be, you know, fine, even if they keep doing stupid stuff. But they probably need to change some of the stuff they do. All right, let's see. Cody says, I noticed the value for the lowest pick in the OTC chart is 190, which seems a bit high. Is the drop-off from pick 256 to undrafted really worth 100 times more than 255 to 256? Or does it overvalue late-round picks? No, it doesn't overvalue late round picks. The reason that the numbers ended up where they did was we wanted to base the chart. You know, one of the problems with doing charts is that it's very hard to get people to accept something that's not the norm. Look, nobody's going to accept our chart as a norm anyway, because it doesn't reflect the value that is in a trade. It doesn't reflect actual trades in the NFL. It affects how you should evaluate the trade. It assesses how you should evaluate the probabilities of the trade working out in your favor or against you based on what we do. Even though the other charts have a much better accuracy at predicting what a trade should cost. The reason that it goes to this, though, is we wanted to have the number be the same as the Jimmy Johnson number. And the only way to get to that, if you look at the value of those last picks, the only way to do it was to start at the 3,000 number. And if you look to see as you go down, this is what they go to. So it's based on all the data of what these players end up basically earning at the end of their rookie deals. Even though you have a lot of players in the seventh round, most of them, who don't get anywhere, you also have a lot of players in the first round that don't. You see, the problem when we look at the first round and when we think of the first round is we think of the first round as can't miss. And the fact is, the first round misses a lot. It's like the let me see if I have them up here. You know, the first round bust rate, like complete bust rate, you know, it's about 20% in round one, a little bit less than that, you know, 35% round two. But you have a lot of players who aren't necessarily top tier guys either. Only 44% of players drafted in the top 10 land a top NFL contract. If you look at players drafted 11 to 32, only about 26%. 21% get that in 33 to 64. While the numbers are very tiny that get those kind of deals late in the draft, there is still value that's there. To just toss it out as like no value at all, I think that that's wrong. But the numbers are based on a lot of research into draft picks and how they've performed basically over the course of their rookie deals. Does the chart value picks according to free agent contract value minus rookie contract value, or only the free agent contract value? Is it a surplus value chart, or does it not care about the rookie wage scale? It doesn't take into account a rookie wage scale. It's based on free agents' values, but normalized for positions. So the first time when I did the numbers, what happened was there were too many kind of little discrepancies, because you would, you know, when you get a player like a Russell Wilson drafted where he's at and he signs, you know, whatever he does, it really kind of starts to throw out some numbers there because it's such an outlier. If you start to normalize all the positions, and this happens for even the lower positions where you have quarterbacks versus non-quarterbacks, if you normalize them, which is what we did by basing them on every position is equal, is the approach that we took. You're basing the value of the draft pick on the value of the market at that position. So in other words, if I drafted a pass rusher number one, Myles Garrett, for instance, and he signs for $25 million, we would look at that as a better pick than a quarterback who signed for $29 million. Because the top quarterbacks in the league are probably averaging around $32 million. Let's say the top quarterbacks average $32-$33. We got a $29. That means we got a top 10 player, but we didn't get like a top five. We didn't get the elite of the elites. Myles Garrett was the highest paid defensive end in the NFL, you know, or the second highest paid, I think, by the end of the year, you know, second highest paid to Bosa. That's kind of where those values came from. So we looked at the contract values, but we looked at them relative to the market when those players signed the contracts, or at least in that year. You could calculate surplus values of the picks. So I've done that before. And again, what you would do with that is you would look at the kind of the stuff that I was talking about before. You would look at what the expected return is on that player. Let's say the expected return on a quarterback is $24 million. All right. And that's, you know, basically a starter, you know, a low level starter. Let's say that's a return. You know, when you're paying nine, you can calculate that surplus value. And that's one of the reasons why a quarterback is such a valuable pick. It's one of the reasons why a pass rusher is such a valuable pick. It's one of the reasons why a tight end and a guard is not a very valuable pick, because the benefit that you get is very small. So the other ones are like big exploitation, because if you have a rookie quarterback and let's say he's a real hit, you know, you're talking about a, you know, $20 million a year kind of surplus value. Instead of having to spend it on that position, you can use that money for other players, you know, via free agency, or players that you want to keep that normally you wouldn't be able to keep if you had a $30 million quarterback on your roster. So I think you can certainly do the numbers that way, but that's not how they're presented with this. But you can do them that way. All right, let's take a look at Twitter. I think those are the only email ones. I'm sorry if I missed anything. You can resend them this week. I'll catch up with them there. Brian asks, in general, I agree with the no first-round running back, but at what pick in the draft do you think it's okay to draft a high-ceiling running back? Okay, if you are intent on drafting someone that would be graded, I guess, as a strong running back, I think the place where you do that, I guess where it would be considered acceptable, it's probably the third round. Let's just look at the numbers here. So in the first round, you do get your most hits at the position, but you're gaining no benefit on that. And some of those hits there, you know, it's a small sample because teams don't generally pick in those spots anyway. Some of those hits are hits because the teams needed to pat themselves on the back for drafting a running back. So they end up on a second contract that's pretty high valued that shouldn't be. I think when you look at the numbers, so basically in the time frames that we looked at, and I know this is extended out, would be about the same. In terms of top running backs, about 6% of picks in round two, 6% of picks in round, Yeah, 6% of picks in round three and about 5% of picks in round four hit like the ultimate status, you know, your highest end possibility. If you look at players who are really, really good, about 31% round two, you know, not talking about elite, just really good players, and about 24% round three. I think when you look at those numbers, the bust rate is actually higher in round two. Basically, it's a higher risk reward kind of position. So I think round three would make sense. You can look at that historically and say that there's been a lot of talented players who have fallen into round three. So we have a good opportunity to get talented players. Our bust potential there is, you know, it's basically 50-50. It's definitely no worse than the second round. So while our highest end potential maybe is not as high, we're still in pretty good kind of category right there. And I think because some of them are not maybe the most elite of athletes, and I know that's weird to say, but sometimes, you know, I think when you're a super elite athlete, some players rely so much on their athleticism that when you get in there against all super athletes, sometimes you don't adjust. Sometimes these guys in the third round might be harder workers or used to working harder. Maybe they're not. The other ones maybe just aren't as used to it. So I think you get a lot more contributors sometimes in that third round that are kind of more accepting of a role, whereas, you know, those picks in the second round, it's almost like boom or bust. Like you need them to be really, really competent. Otherwise, they just don't go anywhere. So I think the third round would be the first spot where you would say that it's okay to draft a running back if you were going to do that. Otherwise, I think it makes sense to just wait until the undrafted process. Really, that to me makes the most sense. You just take a bunch of them and you just load up on players, you know, figure that one of them has got to stick and be competent. But otherwise, yeah, third round, you know, and it depends on the team. You know, if you're a team with a lot of holes, you shouldn't be taking running back. If you're a team with few holes, you can take one. Let's see. Aaron Jones just signed with the Packers, turning better. I doubt he turned down better offers. And Aaron Rodgers was probably a factor in his decision. Devontae Adams needs to be re-signed next year. What do these two players think now? You know, I think with the NFL, you're always thinking about, you have to think about yourself. You have to make sure that you get yours, so to speak. You know, while Devontae Adams probably not thrilled with it, he needs to do what's best for his financial future. If Aaron Rodgers is going to leave the team, if I'm Devontae Adams, I'm not playing a down for Green Bay until they extend me. Even if Rodgers is staying, he probably should take that approach because he's never going to have more leverage than he had this past year. If Devontae Adams gets paid, he shouldn't care if he's playing with Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love. He needs to do what's best for him. Same thing with Aaron Jones. I seriously doubt there was another offer that was better for Aaron Jones. Free agency for running backs has been a nightmare. Bell is the only one to get an even moderate offer, and he got way less than he thought he was going to get. Gordon last year got 8. You know, Jones got more than he would have gotten on 2 tags. I'd be stunned if he gave truth serum to the agent. I think that's Rosenhaus is his agent, that there was legitimately a better offer out there from like another football team. I'd be stunned because Aaron Jones would be a member of that team right now. What roster moves stick out that the Bears can make over the next 2 to 3 years to shed cap and retool the roster on the fly? Should have been more specific to maximize their window if Fields pans out. Let's see. Let's take a look at the Bears here. You know, the Bears are really old on defense. I think you have to be now, if you're thinking about it from Chicago standpoint, I think what you want to do is you probably want to look at this and say, okay, we're in a spot where we're still going to get assistance from our defense. You know, our defense, we still consider that the stronger suit of the team, but we probably should start looking at our defense and seeing who are some of the players that we can trade away before they really get bad looking on the field to where we can start the process of kind of filling up our roster, you know, on offense and defense with younger, talented players. I think that's what they have to do. You know, in terms of specifics, you cut Quinn. That was just such a bad move. They're not going to move Mac at this point. They've just bought into him over and over and over and over again. I believe they drafted a tackle, right? I guess he's playing the right side this year, but eventually he's going to be your left tackle, right? I think at least. So, I mean, I think you hope there. You know, I'm just looking at their defensive players. You know, Goldman saves you money. I would try to trade Nick Foles. I'd call up the Jets right now. Call up, you know, the Eagles. They have Flacco, so they're not going to take him. But I would call around the league, and I would, whatever it takes, I would get rid of Foles, save a couple of bucks. I don't think you're going to be able to trade Andy Dalton, and you paid enough money to him anyway. You're not going to, there's no benefit to it. You know, Trevathan, they should look to move him. They're not going to. I mean, you know, he's a lifer there. Jimmy Graham, I don't know why he's still on the team. I don't even understand that. It's a long road. You know, they only have 28 players under contract next year, not including the rookies. So they're way down compared to the rest of the NFL. You know, it's going to be a process for them. I think you have to decide, is Allen Robinson going to be the guy that you want here long term? You know, or do you see this as just a 1 year thing? I don't know if you want him playing with Fields this year. If Fields ends up being the starter, I don't know if that works out as a one and done. If he's unhappy, I don't think that's a good thing. I'm sure they don't want to trade him. I would think about trading Robinson. If you're not going to extend him, I would think about trading him and seeing what you can get back for him and just start the process of going younger. Yeah, Jimmy Graham's got to go. What is he there for? I'm just looking at that. They'd save $7 million. Like, what is he there for? Maybe they thought they could have moved him during the draft. I have no idea. This is terrible. You know, you're going to extend Roquan Smith. Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, they don't have draft picks. So I the way that I look at it is you want to pair off some of these veteran players, see if you can start to get draft capital back for them. You know, and then the Robinson one is tricky. You have to decide what you want to do there. Yeah, I don't know if there's really an easy path for them what to do. So that's, again, that's another reason why I think this move was necessary. This team was built to surround Mitchell Trubisky with a lot of talent. And it would have worked if Trubisky was decent. He just wasn't. Now the team is really kind of crumbling. So now you're really kind of putting it all on the shoulders of Fields. And I think seeing how you can work around that. It's a tricky one as to what they want to do. But Robinson's the first one they have to decide. And then start trading guys off on that defense. That's what I would do. Void of QB, where does Pace rank as a GM in the league? While free agency is ugly at times, he's good in the draft and trade market. I think he would actually rank quite high as he was able to construct a really talented team, good enough to let Trubisky start a playoff game. I don't know. He's somewhere middle of the pack. Their drafting has been salvaged by their later draft picks. Their top draft picks have been terrible. I don't think they have a very good understanding of trade value when it comes to, and this year they did. But I think some of the stuff they've done in the past has not been a great understanding of trade value or a great use of it. I shouldn't say understanding. A great use of it at the top of the draft. I think they do a better job as the draft goes down. I think they do a good job with their scouting of some of these players that they get later in the draft. They've done a good job with that. I like that they take risks at time in free agency, but their free agency has been a disaster. The Kyle Fuller situation was a disaster this year. It's just too many things. You know, so it's hard to rank him. And, you know, I'd really have to sit down and think about it. And, you know, there's so much turnover. It's like you can't even really rank him with some of the other guys who just haven't been there that long. Free agency is just, he's one of the worst at free agency. It's weird, you know, that yes, they built a playoff team. His free agent approach has been atrocious on certain things. Just really, really, really bad. Mid-draft picks, I think, has been very good. I think identifying players, I guess, who the coaching staff wants to work with has been pretty good as well. When you get into some of their lower level signings, they're high end, just not good. You know, and those top picks, a lot of them, I think, still just haven't panned out. He's got to be in the bottom third, but I don't think it's just all negatives. Like, there's some people that'll probably be, until this Fields pick, which everyone seems to like, I think it would just be like negative, 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 negative. There's positives, I think, that have been here. But overall, yeah, it's been kind of a poor performance. You know, it's been a lot of chasing stuff. You know, it's been probably very similar to what Jacksonville was under Caldwell, to where you were able to kind of build something. The difference being that I think they built something a little bit more sustainable here because they got higher end players, you know, like a Mac who is still young, versus the Jaguars getting kind of a lot of older guys. And I think organizationally, everyone was on the same page more than Jacksonville. You know, Jacksonville, too many voices. You've got Tom Coughlin, you've got Shad Khan, Tony Khan, you've got Dave Caldwell, you've got the coach, Why is the name escaping me? You know, the old Bills coach there. I think it was just too many voices, too many directions there. Chicago, I think, has been more centered, more central. So I think that's one of the reasons why they've been more successful long term, even though there's probably not a big high upside to the team at the moment. How much time have Pace and Nagy bought themselves with the Fields pick? I would think at least two seasons. Is there any chance ownership would fire them after 1 year? I would think they would not let them make that move. There's always a possibility. Look, Maccagnan got fired after a year. So did Todd Bowles. The way that you look at this, and this is why, you know, I made a comment on Twitter during the draft. I was watching on ESPN and Booger McFarland was on, and he was saying to salvage their job, they need Justin Fields on the field this year. I don't think that's the case. Unless things go really, really, really bad with Andy Dalton, you know, 0-4, 0-5, I don't think they need him on the field. I actually think that it could be a negative because if he comes in there and struggles and the team struggles, I think you end up on the flaming hot seat at that point. Even though rookies are expected to struggle, and a rookie struggling doesn't mean that the guy can't play. There are some people you look at and you see stuff that they do, you know, like a Tim Tebow or something, probably couldn't play. I think you'd be on the flaming hot seat if that happened. So I actually think they will buy themselves more time by letting Andy Dalton go out there and, you know, being a 5-6 win kind of player and either handing it over to Fields at some point during the year, you know, after he's kind of got his feet under him and you get him familiar with your system, you have him ready for stuff, and teams aren't as prepared for that. Teams are prepared for the Bears offense with Andy Dalton. You know, I think you might run a better chance of buying more time with that to where everyone is focused on 2022. So I don't think this gets them off the possibility of being fired. I think if he doesn't play much this year, you know, because you're trying to groom him for the future, I think you're definitely safe until 2022. Yeah, he's got to play well in 2022. If Fields doesn't play well in 22, the team is going to be really bad because of some of that other stuff that I mentioned, and then everyone is going to get fired. So like I said, I think 2 years is right, but I think there's probably a strategy to what they're going to do here as to what buys them the most amount of time. And this should be last questions, and I think it was only like three of them I saw or something. If things go south for the Giants, where are they cap-wise for reset in 2022 with a new quarterback? They're nowhere near cap reset. You know, and this is a question. Look, the Giants got a haul for that pick. The question is, why aren't the Giants making that pick? You know, they should have been in the market for quarterback. I think that that's accurate. If he busts this year, you're either going to have to make a trade next year or you're just going to have to get a veteran from free agency. Gosh, I don't even know who you would get. You know, there's nothing that they can do with their salary cap to make it better. If you look, let me see who's available in 22. Taysom Hill. You know, if you're the Giants, you are probably signing Andy Dalton, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, Cam Newton. That's probably what you're doing. Joe Flacco, Marcus Mariota, Mitch. That's probably what you're doing. You know, if Jones busts this year, you're going to have to just get a cheap veteran the following year. By not taking a quarterback, you've kind of hitched your wagon that you've just paid a lot of money to put together to this kid. This is it for him. It's not like he's a rookie to where you say, all right, well, we're giving him 3 years to develop. I mean, it's now or never. If he stinks this year, you know, that's what you're looking at is that. So basically you've turned yourself into the Bears with probably less talent. Well, definitely less talent than when the Bears were at their peak. Hugo says, thoughts on what Brad Holmes did with his first draft. Like I said, I thought they were a little overboard with their celebration. Let's see. So, you know, they get the offensive lineman with the top pick, defensive tackles, corner, wide receiver. I don't know. They solidified, you know, they're looking to solidify a defensive line that's kind of porous, you know, has been a problem that's there. I think they needed a quarterback. I think that makes a lot more sense than a tackle. I think there were probably some other spots they could have thought of besides the tackle. You know, I'm not a big fan of a right tackle at number 7 overall. I think they could have looked at some other spots there. The whole thing for me, I guess, is that they're more geared towards next year. So maybe they're looking at quarterback next year because they have a lot of ammunition from the trade that they had for bringing in Jared Goff with the, you know, sending Stafford out. They did a tremendous job on the Stafford trade. That's really what it is. I don't think that you would look at the draft. And again, this is me not knowing a lot about the players themselves and just looking at the way they approached it, positions that they took and what they did here. I think they're filling some very short-term, not short-term needs, they're just filling some needs that they have with, I think, the home runs expected probably to come next year. You know, this is getting some, I guess, some guys who are going to be tone setters probably for the coach. And, you know, you build through that, I guess, is what they're thinking. Last question from Packer fan is Aaron Rodgers' trade value if they decide to move on? And I don't really know. I don't know, 2 first-round picks? I'm not sure because, you know, as the situation gets uglier and uglier and uglier, his value actually goes down in a trade. Brett Favre didn't get them much. You know, now they were just looking to get rid of Favre. This is different, but, you know, I guess 2 first-round picks. That's just my guess. I really haven't given that a lot of thought because I think it would be crazy for them to move him, but that would be my guess. All right, that does it for me. I think that is it here. So I will be back next week. I'll see what we chat about next week there. But thank you very much for listening, and I will talk to you all again soon.